and welcome to Caution May Cause Wanderlust, the podcast about the experience of living internationally. I'm your host, Elaine Long, and today I am talking with Ryan Hellier. Did I get that right?
You did get that right.
Nice. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to kick things off with our usual round of two truths and a lie. What do you have for me?
So, number one is I urinated on the man who holds the record for the most tries in an international rugby game in history.
Most tries for what?
So tries is what you call when you get like when you put the ball across the line in a rugby game.
And that's a try, not like a goal?
No, it's called a try. I have no idea why.
But didn't you succeed? So it would no longer be a try. It would be an achievement?
I had never thought of that. That sounds way too logical. These are rugby players, so.
But it would be like the equivalent, if we were talking about soccer, of like a goal.
Yes.
Okay.
So he holds the world record and I peed on him.
Okay.
Number two.
Intentionally?
No.
All right, go on to number two.
Number two, I smashed my classroom window with a potato gun when I was 11 years old.
With a what now?
Potato gun.
I feel like we're going to have a lot of terminology questions in this episode.
You don't know what a potato gun is?
Nope.
Really? That's when you get a big, long, it's usually like a, like you get it like a drain pipe, and then you shove a potato in the end of it, you seal off the end, and you put a little bit of explosive in the end, and then you light it, and it goes boom, and it acts like it, what is a gun, and it fires the potato out of the barrel.
Do you ever watch Modern Family?
No.
All right, this sounds to me just as made up as pumpkin chunkin.
You don't believe in a potato gun?
Sounds crazy. What's the third thing?
Third thing is I accidentally stabbed myself with a cookie and drew blood when I was 32 years old.
Honestly, Ryan, all of these things sound like things you could have done. I'm having a hard time. Your stories are always a little out there. What kind of cookie was it?
It was a cookie time cookie from Christchurch, New Zealand.
That doesn't help me at all.
They're really big. They're like, and they have chocolate chips in them. Do you like me to elaborate on how it cut me?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Mm-hmm. That's not going to help me make my decision here. I'm gonna go with the potato thing. Sounds wrong.
You are correct.
So your rugby story and your cookie story were both, in fact, true.
Yes. Do you want the stories behind those?
Why the hell not?
So the cookie story, though. The cookie story, I was just sitting in the cafeteria at work one day, and then just biting into this big cookie I had. And next thing I was like, ow! And blood was coming out of my tongue. I was like, what flaming hell is inside my cookie? And then I was like, okay, there is something sharp inside this thing. So I carefully sat there and dismantled it to try and see what was in there. I think I'm going to sue them and I'm going to get like all this money for them putting a sharp piece of metal in there or something. But I eventually found there was a piece of very sharp plastic in there. And as I pulled it out, I realized it actually says it was a prize. And I actually won like 3 months supply of Cookie Time cookies from them in exchange for getting stabbed in the tongue, which I don't think they intended to do.
That doesn't seem like a good way to manage a prize.
No, I mentioned it to them, but they didn't seem to care. And I was pretty happy to get all the free cookies. So it was worth it for a little bit of blood. I was like 19 years old and poor, so.
I mean, I'm 29 and I still like free stuff. Hmm. Well, thank you for the round of two truths and a lie. We'll take a quick little break and we'll come back with some interview questions, including if New Zealanders get as messy, sloppy, drunk as I've heard Australians get.
Australian does.
Exactly. And a lie that you're originally from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So when did you first move abroad and where was it and where have you been since?
So I left in 2004 and I went to Calgary in Canada, and I lived there for one full year.
Why? What brought you to Canada?
Well, I was playing hockey a lot at the time.
Specify.
Ice hockey.
There we go.
Yeah.
I mean, why else would you go to Canada? It'd be silly to go to Canada for field hockey.
I did play roller hockey while I was there too, but mostly ice hockey. That's not why I went there, but it was an extra motivating factor in helping me go there. I liked the idea of moving to North America in general at the time, and Canada was easier to move to than the US. And eventually, I applied for like something like 800 jobs, but nobody would accept me as an employee since I was straight out of university fresh. And I wasn't already in North America, and I think it was just a bit of a hassle for them to hire somebody from another country. But eventually, I stumbled across a very friendly old man called Mike Benn, who I'd actually shared a lab with, like, the year before. I think I didn't say anything more than hi to him on the way past, but I sent him an email saying, do you have any jobs? Or, sorry, I didn't ask him if he had any jobs available. I asked him if he knew of anywhere that would have jobs. Because I assumed that he wouldn't be hiring anybody at all because he had literally retired like 6 months before. But mm-hmm. It turned out he was retired, but he had a bunch of money left over from research grants, and he used that money to hire me on the spot. So I got a job and jumped on a plane and went to Calgary.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was just your intention to move to North America, have an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that lasted a year and a half.
1 year. I wanted to stay, actually, but I got so frustrated with applying for jobs that I just gave up and I went back.
Back to New Zealand.
Yeah. I considered applying for permanent residency in Canada, but it was a 3-year process, and I was just like, if you're going to make me wait 3 years just to get residency, and I was like, going to have to go away for 3 years and then come back 3 years later. And I was like, this is stupid. So I never even applied.
Oh, that is crazy. I mean, to go away and come back. I mean, if you're gone for 3 years, at that point, you're using those 3 years to continue building your life.
Mm.
And 3 years later, you're not going to be interested in coming back.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. So. I never went back.
I'm not a big fan of immigration in any country. You know, some countries are worse than others, but I think most countries make it too hard. Way too hard.
I noticed when I was in Canada, like I was meeting people who were going through this permanent residency process. But I mean, some of them, they rocketed through with flying colors, and they would be talking about the language requirements. And they said, oh, language requirements was an easy test, not a problem. And I'm talking to them and I'm like, you can barely understand what they're saying.
English language.
And they passed the test, no fine. But then I met people from places like the Netherlands and Sweden, and they're like, oh no, I failed the test. I've got to reset the test because they failed the English language requirements. I was like, you have better English than the Canadians. Like,
wait. Than the people who passed the Canadian test, not the Canadians themselves.
No, I'm saying better than the Canadians themselves. They had better grammar, better spelling. They're more articulate than the average Canadian. Not than a really smart, articulate Canadian, but smarter than the average Canadian. So it seemed that people who were passing these language tests were just the people who studied the most to learn how to answer the whatever obscure questions were in the test.
That has always been my feeling on language tests. I don't think that they accurately measure anything. I've known people, so I mean, you, of course, are familiar with the European system, mm-hmm. right? We have A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, and C2 is basically, you can write fucking poetry in the goddamn new language,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is, you know, ridiculous. I can't write poetry in English. I'm not a poet. But I've met people who have, you know, B2 or C1 certification because they learned for the test. And then I'm sitting with them at a restaurant and they can't talk to the waiter. They can't, like, they can't ask a basic question about an item on the menu. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I don't put a lot of stock in language exams. I think, you know, can you use the language in a meaningful way? Yes or no? And the exams don't measure that correctly.
So one of them actually showed me the test and the questions they were failing on. And me as a native speaker couldn't answer the questions. It was like, what is a pronoun adjunctive? What's it? I was like, I have no idea. Why would I know? Why would I care? I have no idea.
But you left Canada because you weren't having an easy time with your residence and staying there.
Yeah.
And what happened after that?
I went back to New Zealand and got a job as a research assistant at a university. And then partway through doing that, my supervisor asked me to switch to a PhD. And I realized that I would earn basically the same amount doing a PhD as I was as a research assistant, which didn't pay very well. And so I started doing that. And then in my spare time, I started doing web development just for fun. I was building a website for my local hockey club.
Wait, what was the PhD in?
Chemistry.
Did you ever finish that?
No.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure you don't have a doctorate, but maybe I could have been one of your two truths and a lie and I would have gotten it wrong.
No, I started just building a website for my local hockey club. This is really dumb. So whenever I wanted to play hockey, you had to go to the ice rink and just like hang around for like 10 minutes or even longer and just hope that somebody happened to come along who knew when the games were on. I was like, this is the stupidest system ever, obviously. And so I went to the club and said, can I build a website? And they said, sure, but like we already have one. I was like, where is it? And I went to look at it and it hadn't been updated in like 3 years. So I was like, well, nobody uses it. So I made one, made sure it was up to date. And then the hockey club grew quite a lot all of a sudden, unsurprisingly. And that gave me a lot of motivation to improve it. And I was doing a ton of reading. And then I was using this website called WordPressGarage.com. And the author of it wrote a post about a drop-down menu plugin for a piece of software called WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the comments section and I just slammed this thing. I was like, this is crap. I could do way better. And then I hit submit. And as soon as I hit submit, I was like, that's a real jerk comment to write.
It is a little rude.
It's super rude because the guy who wrote this piece of software was just releasing it to the public for free and I'm just being a jerk.
So isn't WordPress a big thing?
It wasn't back then.
But it is now.
Yeah.
You know how stupid I am with technology, so I'm asking a legitimate question right now.
It was bigger, but it wasn't back then.
Okay.
Nobody knew what it was back then. But this drop-down menu plugin, I was like, well, I either apologize for criticizing it, but that's a bit hollow because you can see what I wrote. I can contact the author, Miriam, and ask her to remove my comment, but that's going to take like 12 hours probably, and the guy might see it anyway. Or I could just make something better and apologize as well. So I decided to take the option of making something better and apologizing. And that thing, which was, in my opinion, at least better, ended up getting, I think, about 500,000 downloads on it quite quickly. And from that, people just started offering me money to build software. And then as one day I was just like, I don't need to do chemistry anymore. And I just quit. And overnight switched and became software developer.
And that was all still in New Zealand?
Yeah.
So when did you have your next international adventure? What brought you then back?
So it'd been a year or 1 year, year and a half, 2 years. I'm not sure exactly what the time frame was. And then I noticed that basically I ran out of money. I was trying to work on a startup business and it wasn't going very well. And I just needed money in a hurry. So I just went on Twitter and said, does anybody know of any work going? Thinking somebody might be able to hook me up with a good paying task to do for some foreign company. And this super friendly guy I knew online called Ronald Eureka, who was from, I think at the time he was living in Oklahoma City in the US. And he immediately said, can I call you on Skype? He called me and he said, do you mind relocating? And I was like, yes, I do mind relocating, because I knew full well I did not want to live in Oklahoma City in the US. I don't know much about the US, but I knew that Oklahoma City is not likely to suit me. And he said, that's such a pity, because I just moved to this place called Norway. Have you heard of it? I was just like, yes, I've heard of Norway. He goes, oh, cool, you've heard of it. And I was,
no, that is the wrong answer. When someone asks you that, you go, what is this, like Norway, Oklahoma or some crap? Like, do you mean the country or is this like...
Well, then he said, oh, it's this place called Oslo. And I'm like, oh, cool, the capital. And I think he just assumed that New Zealand has had the worst geography possible. was like, yeah, I know where Oslo is. And he told me the job description. I was like, the job description basically describes me. So I applied, and a week later, they sent me tickets to Norway, and I jumped on a plane. Boof.
A week later? Wow.
Might be exaggerating. In my mind, it was a week later. It may have been more. It felt like a week. It was pretty short notice. Everybody around me was like, what the hell? You're moving to Norway?
So you moved to Norway, very little preparation.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that go?
Extremely well. I went straight into the middle of a Norwegian winter. Got off the plane, there is nothing but snow and darkness. But everything was a bit different. Everything was kind of exciting. The job was cool. The people in the job were super friendly.
That's great.
I just felt I fitted in quite well.
That's great. I mean, you hear a lot of stuff about, you know, the more Nordic countries with, you know, being a little bit more isolated as a foreigner coming in because everyone's kind of got their bubble and it takes longer to break in. But to have good work colleagues and come in, I think it always helps too to have that start of a new adventure energy.
I noticed talking to a lot of the foreigners in Norway, they would almost consistently say that they had trouble making friends. I found I had less trouble making friends in Norway than I have anywhere else. And I think it's because there's a certain amount of social awkwardness I have, but it allows me to burst through the bubble because I don't really care that I'm being awkward. And I think this helps burst through that sort of social bubble that the Scandinavian people have.
I love it. I love it. I had a hard time making friends in Spain. So, I know when everyone thinks, oh, Southern Europeaners, so warm, so open. I had a hard time making, you know, longer lasting, meaningful connections. I found that a lot of people had, you know, mis amigos de toda la vida, my friends of the whole life. And I felt that they had very little interest in me. That being said, I think it probably also, I hadn't learned how to make new friends and find my people outside of my original bubble yet, you know? So I think when you come in with that new adventure energy, and then if your super special trick is, hey, I'm awkward, it's going to make things work. Why not?
And remember, there's like a social norm in Norway. If you get on a train or a bus or any sort of public transport, you do not look at anybody else. You do not talk to anybody else. The seats will even be facing each other, but you need to look away from everybody else. You definitely don't look them in the eye. And when I realized this, I was like, this is a really fun way to mess with people. So I get straight on the train, sit down, look somebody straight in the eye. And before they got a chance to move away, I'd just be like, hey, how's it going? And they'd just be like, what? And they consistently said the only reason I got away with it is because I was clearly a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they said, if you were a Norwegian man saying this to me, I would be freaking out, thinking you're about to stab me in the face.
Oh, God.
They said, this is not at all normal, but because you're a foreigner, you're getting away with it. I don't think they realized I was really just screwing with them. This is like my way of entertaining myself.
You can be very hard to read. I'm not sure they could tell. My version of the foreigner bonus is a little bit more gentle. I normally just get away with using the informal do when you're supposed to use the informal do. The informal you, which in German is du, when you're supposed to be using the formal one. And I tend to get away with that more than most people.
My German is so bad that nobody is going to even question that for me. They'll just be like,
he
has no idea.
My German is good enough that I know what I'm supposed to be doing. I just know I don't like it.
Neither.
But I get the foreigner bonus and I get away with it. But I do hope that on those trains in Norway, you weren't, you know, sitting down across from like a single woman in the evening on an empty train and playing that game. Because that's not funny.
Not on an empty train.
Mm-hmm, okay.
On a busy train, I would.
All right. As long as, you know, maybe there's like some safety buffers there. It can be very scary.
Yeah. You would never get on a train when there's only one person on the train and then go sit directly opposite them and start freaking them out. That would be a little evil.
It would be very fucked up, I think. All right. So that's kind of what helped you kind of settle in Norway. And how long did you stay?
2 years.
2 years. 2 years. Still the whole time working at the same company?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what got you out of Norway?
So I had this awkward conversation once where one of the owners of the company wanted to meet with me to discuss the company. And the first thing I said is, well, this company is not doing very well. It's clearly losing money. Clearly you need to like start firing people. In fact, I think you should have done already. And he looked very awkward. And I said, I can see this is coming. And because of this, I'm already looking around for options outside of the company. Probably not in Norway. And if you're going to fire anybody, please make sure that it's me who was fired first.
Wow.
Well, I knew other people wouldn't want to be fired. So I was like, if you're going to get rid of anybody, you might as well get rid of me, who kind of wanted to go anyway.
Like, that's nice of you.
I like the company. I like the people. But it became a kind of unpleasant as we lost more and more money because people were getting very stressed out.
I mean, yeah, the energy in a sinking ship is never positive.
And all of the companies that I did want to work for were mostly based in the United States. And so I wanted to work remotely for them. But Norway is an extremely expensive place to live. And if you're going to work remotely, it doesn't really make any sense to live in the most expensive place you can find.
No.
So Norway, that wrote Norway off the cards, unfortunately.
Can I say just a little introduction? I am so regretting not having picked up and spent like the last half of 2020 and the first half of 2021 in like Prague or something, where it's more affordable than Berlin and it's beautiful and I would have loved it. And you know, the whole time I was so busy holding out hope that Corona was going to end the next week. I should have just taken the year, just had an adventure. Although, to be fair, it probably wouldn't have been a great adventure with everybody else in lockdown as well. So, sorry, that was my little interjection about cost of living.
Mm-hmm. So I took off around this time. I took off, I think, like 6 weeks off work. And during this, I decided to go traveling. And I decided that I wanted to stay in Europe to live. And so I did a bunch of traveling around, a little bit around the Netherlands, decided I didn't want to live there because it's too flat and, I don't know, language sounds a bit horrible to me.
I quite like the language, but
Nice people, but like, I don't know, that Dutch sound, I don't know, grates on my nerves slightly.
I'm sorry, No.
No?
I mean, I'm not saying no, you're allowed to have your opinion. I personally like Dutch. It also depends a lot on the region. The reason I was saying no is because I don't understand how you have an issue with the Dutch language and you ended up here. Most people will complain about the German language, which, by the way, I also quite like.
So I like the sound of the German language.
More than Dutch?
Yes, definitely.
Interesting. I like them both. I would consider them relatively similar. I think if you don't like one, you don't like the other.
So then I went traveling in Germany because of this. And as I was traveling around, I was asking people, where should I live? And all of the people immediately said, Hamburg, Köln, these sorts of places. And I was like, oh. And then I said, well, aren't they quite expensive? And they said, yeah, but the incomes are better there. Then I had to explain that I'll be working for a remote company, likely in America. So it would make sense for me to live somewhere that was cheap. And then they said, oh, this is easier then. You need to move to Dresden, Leipzig, or Berlin. I was like, okay, I'll head over that part of the countryside then. The closer I got, what I noticed was all of the Germans said Dresden, Leipzig, or Berlin, excellent places to live if you want somewhere cheap. Every foreigner said, do not move to Dresden or Leipzig. They said, move to Berlin. And as I was on the train on my way to Berlin, I got a message from one of my coworkers saying he got fired. And I was just like, what? I was like, what did you do wrong? And he said, I didn't do anything wrong. They just told me they don't need me anymore. And I was like, I told them to get rid of me first. So that was dumb. And then 5 minutes later, I got another message. Somebody else got fired. 5 minutes later, somebody else got fired. And this went on for like an hour.
Oh,
and then I got a message saying, everybody's gone but you. We think you're next. And I was like, no kidding, I'm next. The only reason they didn't get rid of me that day was because I was on holiday. And so I immediately sent a message to my boss while I was on the train and said, yeah, I'd like a meeting with you on Monday morning at 8:30 a.m., please.
Ugh, oh God, I never asked for an 8:30 meeting, but good on you.
Well, as it turned out, because I knew I was about to get the boot, I was a bit lazy and I accidentally actually slept until like 10:30 and then rolled into work at like 11 And I was like, I'm really sorry, I'm late. And my boss was like, it's not a problem, it's fine. It's like, knowing this is the last half hour of my
It's work. Not a problem, it's fine, you're fired.
We had a super uncomfortable meeting and he was like going through explaining troubles in the company. I was like, dude, can we just cut the bullshit? I really don't care about this. Like, am I gone today? What's the deal? I'm like fine with this. But he still wanted to continue with his big spiel. He looked very upset. Obviously, this was quite a stressful experience for him. And I'm just sitting there going, this is not a problem. But this is way more stress for you.
Any decent human being is going to have some stress in firing someone. Yeah.
And then that was the end of it. I had an option. I could stay for another 3 months. Or I left that day and they let me keep my computer and they gave me a month's paid leave. So I was like, I'll take the month's paid leave.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, I got another job.
Well, first of all, let's just circle around to that because that is such a European thing. This 3 months notice or getting kind of bought out in some way like that, which is such a cool thing, you know, and to be able to get like a month's paid leave is, and even in the States, you don't have these, in German, we would call them Kündigungsfrist, this like notice period that goes on forever. I mean, you know that now I'm working also in headhunting and it's, you know, I'm dealing with tax and legal people and some people in this country, not only do they have a 3 month notice period, but they have 3 months to the end of the quarter, which can mean that like when they want to quit, when they find something that they're excited to go change and do, they're locked in for like five whole months because you need to do the 3 months to the end of the quarter. But additionally, it's a nice thing. Like what happened with you when the company was done and they had to let you go, not being like out on the street from one day to the next.
I'm used to that though. In New Zealand, you can't just give somebody the boot by the.
Okay. Well, for me, it's a very socialist benefit thing.
That felt completely normal to me. So.
Yeah. Well, so, but you were talking about people recommending Dresden, Leipzig, or Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Those, of course, are all in the Old East, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're more affordable. And did any of the, you said the expats were telling you not to go to Dresden or Leipzig. Did they say why?
They said I probably wouldn't feel as welcome in those places.
Hmm.
And that Berlin was just far more interesting, far more stuff to do, which is true. And that there would be far more welcoming of foreigners.
Okay. I mean, I've only been to Dresden and Leipzig on short little weekend trips, so I don't know them very, very well. I mean, obviously Berlin is a bigger city and it is very international, but I would say personally, I mean, I think you kind of have to decide what kind of city works for you individually, but the one thing that I always come up against with other, you know, people living internationally is Berlin is a horrible city if you want to actually learn any German or integrate in any way.
You can integrate into Berlin, you're maybe not integrating into Germany.
You're integrating into the international expat culture and you are not learning the language and you're not, it's a different world.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it's, I mean, which is positives and negatives, right? Obviously you can get, you can make more friends without knowing German, but then you're also never, many people never manage to learn the German.
Yep, that is a problem. You are integrating, you're just integrating into your environment in both cases.
Yeah, that's fair.
Here, your environment does not require German.
Are you glad that you decided on Berlin?
I think I'd be happy wherever I land. I'll mold to my surroundings.
You're very easygoing.
I guess if I had to go back, I would probably choose either a Baltic country or somewhere crazy like Bulgaria.
Oh, so not even, not Dresden or Leipzig, but a totally different country.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to go Bulgaria, if you were to go east, it would get cheaper too.
Mm. It's cheaper. I think it's easier to make friends in some of these places. They're quite friendly people in them.
It seems like you'd find everyone friendly.
There's a lot less bureaucracy, or when there is bureaucracy, you can kind of buy your way around it.
Oh, that doesn't sit well with me. I just, my issue with bureaucracy is the lack of logic, and buying your way around it doesn't solve that for me. I would like a consistent line of logic.
I would, but buying my way around a problem gets rid of the problem.
Fair enough.
I also sort of buy my way around problems here in Germany too, though. Not through bribing, but I always hire an immigration lawyer to process visa stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Hired a tax accountant to handle taxes here because dealing with that crap looks way too complicated.
Tiny little side note here. I am very off-put by the U.S. system of taxing citizens regardless of where they live or where their income's from. The U.S. is one of, to my knowledge, three countries that taxes based on citizenship, even if you've never lived there and never earned a penny from the country yourself. It's the U.S., it's the U.S., Hungary, and Eritrea. To my knowledge,
I thought it was only the US.
Nah, Hungary and Eritrea. Eritrea does it a little differently, and I'm not exactly sure what Hungary does, but those are the three countries that are known for pulling this crap, and it is crap. It's bullshit, and at the end of the day, you know, actual tax, I don't end up paying any taxes in the US. I just have to pay a specialist to file my paperwork, and then there's enough treaties that because I pay in Germany, I don't have to pay again in the States, but actual US taxpayers are paying for the IRS to have employees to deal with these stupid laws that affect me and to look at my paperwork. And at the end of the day, there's no extra revenue from me. It's just a fucking headache for everybody involved and a waste of actual taxpayer dollars. So
I think a lot of government bureaucracy is just a big money suck that's not needed.
I think that's actually what you listed as one of your least favorite things of living internationally is the foreign bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. So this, I didn't realize until I left New Zealand that we have less bureaucracy, at least for the local people. I didn't really experience bureaucracy in New Zealand to any extent. It was always a very simple way to get around problems or get problems fixed, or there just weren't problems. Taxes were simple. Healthcare was simple, and then I moved to other countries and suddenly you've got to apply to get healthcare instead of just having it. Or you come here to Germany, you actually need to pay for healthcare. You need to pay somebody to sort your taxes or deal with a lot of documentation. What's other examples?
Well, I'm curious though, do you think that it was easy for you in New Zealand because you are from there and it's what you grew up in? Or do you think the system is actually simpler?
So I've noticed since leaving, they spend a lot of effort making things simple for the majority of people, which is the people who live there and are just normal tax-paying people. When you're outside of that mold, things do become more complicated.
Kind of like how here in Germany, you're outside of that mold, you're an expat.
Yeah, but then I asked German friends and they have many of the same problems.
That's fair. I mean, I do think it is pretty complicated here.
And certainly in Canada, I don't think I was outside of the mold for most things. But like the taxes just looked ridiculous. It was easily solved problem. You just went to this department store and said, I want to sort my taxes, and you hand them a bunch of documents. And then 5 minutes later, they hand you this thing that says the government owes you a bunch of money, but
yeah.
So those are solutions to it, but it's like a solution that I didn't look like it should be necessary.
I mean, I think one of the things I was saying, so you know, I used to work in tax law, right? And right now, for example, like internationally, they're talking about you know, global minimum tax rate and this and that. Or I was talking recently with somebody about the rental versus the purchase market for real estate in Berlin and things like that. And I feel like it's gotten to the point in a lot of these situations with any kind of bureaucracy or any kind of legal setup where it's just like, there was a mistake made 500 steps ago, and at no point has anybody been willing to go back and undo that mistake. So there just keeps being band-aid after band-aid after band-aid, taking us more and more steps away from the actual issue we need to fix.
My personal view of most of these things is that laws should be simplified rather than made more complex, but
yeah.
Governments never do that. Well, at least very rarely do. I think this is why New Zealand ended up with a simpler tax system. Apparently they took the tax system many years ago and threw it out. and started from scratch.
Yeah, the US had a reform in 2017 too. It didn't help.
Okay, that didn't help.
But I do have to ask. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was how your perspective has changed on these different places that you live. So you've been in Canada, you've been in Norway, and now you're in Germany. And I think this is also such a great spot for me to ask you that, you know, especially we're talking about the bureaucracy. Let's start with, how has your perspective on Germany changed since moving to Berlin?
I thought things in Germany would be very well organized and would make a lot of sense. I realized they probably made sense to whoever was making some rule at the time.
I think that's generous of you. Go on.
Yeah. But mostly it's just bizarre. Like, some things are just strange. I can kind of see the line of thought people were going on down when they made some of these rules or the way things work. But a lot of the time it's just bizarre.
In Germany, from what you kind of had in your mind, was it's not as organized as you expected. What about Norway and Canada? What was kind of a surprise for you there?
Most of Canada was what I expected. I was very surprised at some of the racism I experienced there.
Really? I would be surprised too.
Racism and homophobia.
Canadians are supposed to be nice. That's the one stereotype I know about them. They're supposed to be nice.
I was really thrown off by this. I used to be hanging around with a bunch of people. Prime example, we were on our way to a bar one day. We got to the bar. A friend of mine walked in, and then he immediately jumped back out and he said, "Wait, I need to talk to you guys." And he dragged us aside and he said, there's a problem. He said, "I don't have a problem with it, but I need to check that it's okay with you guys." I was like, "Oh, what is it?" And he said, "There's somebody in there. I got to make sure you're okay." And I was like, "The heck kind of person is in there that there's a problem?" And he said, "Yeah, there's a bunch of gay people at the bar." And I was just like, "Okay." And he goes, "Is this a problem?" I'm like, "Is what a problem?" And then he said, "Well, there's gay people at the bar. Like, I don't have a problem with gay people, but I don't know if you did." And I was like, "Holy shit." I was like, "The only thing I have a problem with here is that you think there's a possibility that I might have a problem with gay people."
And honestly, I've got a little bit of a problem with you being willing to socialize with somebody who would refuse to go to a bar that has gay people in it.
Well,
I'm not sure I want to be friends with you if you're okay with being friends with me if I am not okay with that.
I guess if you're in a situation where there's a lot of people who have issues with this, you don't have any choice. But obviously nobody in our group of friends had a problem, so everybody walked in. But nobody seemed to find it odd that he asked that question apart from the foreigners.
Jeez.
Yeah. And the hockey team I was a member of, we had troubles. I think it was like four of our team members were Asian. And then all of a sudden one day they came running and they're like, "We need to leave." I was like, "What's the problem?" And it turned out somebody had walked up and sort of pretended to load a shotgun, as it threatened, meaning they were threatening to shoot them, and they ran off. And I was just like, "Well, look, there's police right there. Why don't we just tell the police?" And they said, "You crazy? We can't tell the police. The police are going to get us in a whole bunch of trouble." I'm like, "Why would you be in trouble?" And they're like, "Well, we're Asian and they're police." And I was like, "What?" Wow. And apparently this was the thing. They had to be afraid of the police because the police were often racist. I was like, "Holy crap."
Jeez.
I'd never come across that before, which was quite alarming. And then later on too, in the same group of people started asking me about the native people of New Zealand. And we're just having pizza one day. And people were like, "Oh, so did you ever have any native people in your school when you're in primary school?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh, cool." They said, "You know, did you beat them up very often?" And I was just like, "What the hell?" Like,
yeah, every day, man. It was our hobby. How else are you going to get your exercise in?
I was like, "No." did you beat up the native kids in your school? And they're like, yeah, probably shouldn't have. And I was just like, oh my God.
All right.
The weird thing is they seem like really nice people.
I mean, that's a stereotype I know.
Yeah.
But all right, what about Norway? Anything different there than you expected? I mean, you kind of went there
so spur we're in the Norway. Moment. I just realized we should back up and say that these are extreme examples I was bringing up from Canada. Most people I knew in Canada were super lovely people.
Got it.
We should just clarify that.
You know what?
I like Canadians. And I would happily, I would very happily live in Canada again. This is not a problem.
I think that's honestly also true most places you go. But the extreme examples are kind of those moments of culture shock and those moments of this isn't what I was expecting. You know,
I've never had those extreme examples like that in any other country. Canada was the only one.
All right, then.
But you asked about Norway. I didn't know what to expect when I went to Norway. I thought that people would be less standoffish. I thought people would be more confident and friendly. But I very quickly realized that people were very timid, not that open to just talking to random people.
Let me ask, why did you expect them to be more open? Where did that, like,
I didn't have a stereotype of Scandinavian people being. How would you describe it? Not standoffish. Maybe it is standoffish.
I want to say geschlossen, but that's a German word, and that's not even the right German word. That's just a weird, I don't know where that came from. I mean, yeah, kind of closed off.
Yeah. But I didn't have those stereotypes. I just didn't know much about the culture. I had known plenty of people from Norway and Sweden and other places. But I wasn't judging an entire culture based on a couple of examples.
So, but where did you then have the idea that they would be more open?
I just assumed that would be like everywhere else they'd been, but they weren't. They were far more closed off. But I never found that to be a problem. It was just a matter of poking a hole in the bubble that had formed.
Fair enough. Whatever works.
I did like Norway, though, and I still have, like, the friends who I made in Norway, I'm still very good friends with.
That's always nice.
And I think that's a sign that they don't make that many friends, but when they do make friends, it's quite solid. It's like a strong friendship.
I mean, that is what they say, right? About Southerners, peaches, Northerners, coconuts, right? Southerners, soft, juicy outside, hard pit. Northerners, hard shell, but when you break through, really sweet. You've never heard that before?
No. Where did the coconut come into it?
Coconuts are the Northerners. Hard shell, and when you break through, they're really sweet. It was a comparison a Spanish teacher of mine gave me almost a decade ago. I'm kind of stuck. I mean, I see his point. So, but I have to ask you, so all these different places, all these different new experiences, everything kind of, you know, some expectations met, some expectations exceeded, some things fell short. Has there been any one thing that has helped you feel grounded through all of it?
The internet? The internet allows me to have the same, there's a certain chunk of my life which is consistent, and that's the internet. That doesn't change no matter where I go.
Sorry. I just very unprofessionally turned my computer around and pointed on a note that Ryan had written for something that I think is hilarious.
Oh, I see.
Did you misread the question when you wrote that?
No, I know why I said that. I just didn't think of it now. So
I think it's fucking, I read it and I thought it was hilarious.
So the answer I wrote down was McDonald's, because McDonald's restaurants are everywhere. And so if I just want to experience something that I could experience at home, I can go to McDonald's.
Like, I think that is such a sweet
There's no stress thing. When you go into McDonald's, because you know how it works. I've never been in a McDonald's in any other country where it didn't feel mostly familiar. KFC does not count. That doesn't work. Like, I've been to KFC in China and I was like, what the heck is this?
Have you been to McDonald's in China?
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have.
Oh, I haven't.
But it was just normal. Like, they probably had some Chinese specific things, but it was still burgers. But I went to KFC and it was chicken, but it's like, I order something and it's like clearly Chinese food. It's Chinese food from KFC and it has chicken in it. Like,
that's not Kentucky.
Yeah, there's nothing Kentucky.
Kentucky
about.
Has like two Chinese people. I don't know if that's true. I was a joke. I'm not sure.
This was actually, so this is interesting. When I was planning to move to Canada or the States, I was applying for a lot of jobs. And there were some places where I applied for jobs working in big pharmaceutical companies. I would look up the demographics for the place where this big chemical factory would be. And it was very clear some places I would never want to move to because it would be a whole like city of 100,000 people. And the demographics indicated there was like one black person in the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is there only one? I think there's probably a good reason for this. And I took that as a tip, as perhaps I shouldn't move there.
Yeah. I think when you're from a place that has more diversity, a place that's very homogeneous can be kind of scary. And like, it's not necessarily always the case. And I'm sure there are plenty of homogeneous places that are that way because of, you know, geographic location or whatever. But for me, the idea of a city that has one black person and zero or one Asian people, zero Asian people or one Asian person, that was a hard sentence. It makes me nervous about what the energy might be there.
There was one place, I can't remember the name of it, but it had statistically half a black person in it.
I love those statistics.
That's like a city of like 60,000 people and has half
a
black person.
What do you think that means? What do you think that means? Is that like one half black person or like...
I'm not even sure how you
or like
that.
One black person that lives there 50% of the time? Like...
Yeah, I'm not sure how they got that. It's a common thing when they calculate these things though. So.
Yeah. No, but okay. I definitely want to ask you. So there's been a couple things that have kind of kept you grounded in all of these different experiences. There's also been plenty of different like shifts in perspective. One of my favorite things to ask is, have you in any significant way experienced culture shock? And if so, do you have any one big memory of it? Because I think this is different for everyone. You know, some people say, no, I was expecting things to be different and I didn't feel anything. But sometimes, you know, there's just that one moment that you weren't looking to experience and it hits you. And they're always such interesting stories.
I think the time when I got the most culture shock was when I moved to Canada. Not because there was a big culture change, but because I wasn't used to changes. It was the first country I'd lived in outside of New Zealand. And so often it was just minor things that would just really throw me off, particularly since they speak English there. So I assumed that all of the words that I would be using would make sense.
That's hilarious. You clearly know that that's not the case now. We've been friends.
For sure.
And how often do you say something where I'm like, what the fuck? Or I say something and you don't know what it is?
Like, I went into Subway. You would think buying a sandwich in Subway would be super simple. I walked in there and I'm like, I want the lettuce. I want the mayo. I want the, I don't know, like herb bun toasted, please. But then I'll be like, and I want all of those things in this section apart from the gherkins. And they would be
pickles.
Like, they'll be like, yeah, they'll be like, and do you want pickles? I'm like, yeah, I'll have pickles, please.
What do you think pickles are?
I was something that's pickled. I was like, I don't know what he's asking
well,
about.
Well, pickles are pickled cucumbers. That's gherkins.
I didn't know this.
That's funny.
All I knew is I didn't want a gherkin, and if there was something else that was pickled, that's fine, but I just didn't want the gherkins. The guy kept giving me gherkins every day. And
because
well,
you said you wanted pickles.
And then in the end, I was like, dude, why do you keep giving me gherkins? And he was like, yeah, you've asked for like, this gherk or something for like the past week. And I'm like, yeah, and you keep giving them to me. And he goes, what are they? What's a gherk? I'm like, a gherkin? And then I was like, that thing. And he goes, the pickle? I'm like, no, the gherkin. This is awkward.
In New York, we also call them pickles, but a gherkin is a certain kind of pickle. And
I didn't know this at the time though. Thank you.
So I do have to tell you, when you kind of gave me some notes beforehand, one of the things you talked about in Culture Shock was actually the level of formality in Canada.
Oh, I forgot about this. So, yeah, this really threw me off. So I was working in the University of Calgary, and my boss was this super friendly guy, Mike, who I met in New Zealand. He was like an old academic, 73 years old, but super friendly, nice guy. I always called him Mike, no big deal. He kept introducing to me to other professors in the department, and I would ask him their name, they would tell me the name, and I'd be like, hey, Eric, hey, Bob, hey, Elaine, and never any big problems. And then I started getting to know some of the other students that were there. I wasn't a student, but I was in the same age bracket as them. And they'd be like, oh, who are you working for? I'm like, I work for Mike. And they're like, who's Mike? I'm like, Mike works just down the hall. He's like, you talked to him today. And he goes, I haven't talked to any Mike. I don't know any Mikes here. And I was like, Mike Ben. And they're like, Mike Ben. And the only Ben I know is Professor Ben. I had no idea his name was Mike. Oh. They never referred to their professors by their first name. I was referring to everybody by their first name. And what I didn't realize was that this appeared to slightly offend some people that I was going to this, what to me felt completely normal.
Did it offend the professors or the students?
I think that some of the professors found it at least a little bit odd.
Oh.
They also would have immediately noticed I had a thick accent and just chalked it up to that. But yeah, I found that super strange because in New Zealand, if I referred to somebody as Professor so-and-so, that's because I'm poking fun at them. I'm like, ha ha, like, let's be super formal and call you Professor. Never think of calling somebody that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was an interesting experience in Spain. Even at the university, most people use the informal you. Even with professors, of course, Latin America is another story, but in Spain, that was the first experience I had with the formal and informal you as a language function. And then here in Germany, of course, it's a different world entirely. There's a different expectation. And this kind of goes also to what I mentioned earlier for me with the, you know, the foreigner bonus, where I kind of get away with calling people by their first name or using the informal you. I was having a conversation though recently with a colleague of mine who was raised very strictly to Zs, so to use the formal you. And he only feels comfortable duzing, so using the informal you, when the person is older than him and has given him permission. And for me, we were talking about it and I explained to him, for me, this formal you, it has never felt like a sign of respect. It has felt like an aggressive distancing tactic, a way of saying, I don't want much to do with you. And to me, that's the antithesis of respect. And this distancing thing has always made me very uncomfortable. And when I explained that to my colleague who's been raised on this formal etiquette, he understood what I was explaining, but he also couldn't quite fathom it. You know, for him, it was such a foreign idea.
I would never do formal things in my own country or my own language. I'm very informal, always have been, always will be. So to come into another country and have this issue with formal versus informal speech isn't something I really do. I didn't even think of doing it. My level of German is very low, so I feel I can get away with saying whatever I want and people just... I'm happy if they can understand me, period. But yeah, having to do was the... feels very elitist to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that too. Mm-hmm. You know? All right. Before we wrap up, there are two questions that I always like to end on before we go into your last little story. Mm-hmm. So the first of those is... do you think you'll ever move again? I mean, you've been from New Zealand to Canada, back to New Zealand, Norway, Berlin. Are you going to move again, or is Berlin your forever home?
I have absolutely no idea.
Good answer. If you were drinking too, I'd cheers you on that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I didn't come to Berlin with the intention of staying, but I've been here like over 6 years now and don't have plans to leave. So maybe I'm here forever, but maybe some beautiful girl from another country like meets to me and is like, you need to come back to my country. And I'm like, clearly I need to move. That would make me move. Or maybe, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg says, I need a new chief technology officer. Ryan, you're the man. We're going to pay you a bunch of money and I'll move to Timbuktu in the United States.
Please at least move somewhere that would be fun for me to visit.
If they pay me enough, I'll fly you to come visit and we'll have fun. No, we can both fly somewhere else.
There we go. That's what I need. Otherwise, it has to be a fun location.
Mm-hmm.
But if they pay you enough, you can fly us both somewhere else. That sounds good too.
Mark Zuckerberg is listening to this. I will be your CTO.
So you're not sure if this is it, but you do promise to make sure you go somewhere interesting or you have enough money for us to go somewhere else interesting when we hang out. Exactly. Yeah. All right. And then my ultimate favorite question so far, I only get one answer, but I always like to ask it.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go back and make a different decision that didn't take you into this life of living internationally, would you?
No. But there are things which could have happened which would make me stay in New Zealand. Like if I met a wonderful girl who wanted me to stay, I would have stayed. Or if I got a job which I couldn't say no to, might have stayed.
Do you wish those things had happened or do you regret?
No, I have no regrets.
There you go.
I would have far more regrets if I'd stayed put.
And that is usually the response that I hear. You know, ups and downs, but I would regret it more had I stayed.
I've heard many people like who stayed where we grew up and they would say, oh, you're so lucky you get to do all this traveling. And I was like, there's no luck involved in this.
It was a conscious decision.
Zero luck whatsoever. This is definitely a conscious decision.
On that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan will leave us with his last anecdote for the episode and one or two book recommendations. Little anecdote to leave us with.
So a long time ago, I discovered that organizing things in my spare time was something I liked to do. This originally started by me running ice hockey leagues. And I don't know, I got some sort of pleasure out of creating a community of hockey players all playing together and playing games. And the people I organized it for genuinely seemed to enjoy it. And then I moved to Norway. I didn't play hockey there. But I immediately started organizing trips into the outdoors, hiking, biking, all sorts of things. Then I moved to Germany and I started doing this more and more and more. And somehow I ended up being given the largest hiking group in Berlin. Not that Berlin is big on hiking, but I somehow ended up...
Berlin mostly has nature walking that we call hiking because we're all optimists. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is exactly that. It is day walks in nature.
Still beautiful.
Yeah. You've got over 10,000 members now. And I just find this very rewarding to just keep a little group operational with little events going on every week. Also run a co-working event here in Berlin. So once a week I get people together to co-work usually in a hotel lobby somewhere. I just like creating these little communities.
I mean, this is also really how our friendship really solidified, right? I mean, we met through some online dinner party during Corona, and then you had these mini kind of micro movie nights going on as things were slowly opening up a bit, but we still couldn't do big group events. And it was, you know, organizing that, and for me, that was an amazing thing too, you know, like with Corona going on and everything that was happening. In general, just as an expat, having groups and communities and activities is such a big part of, you know, your mental health and your social stability and handling everything that you need to handle and having the connections you need to have. And Corona took a lot of that away from us. And then when you started those movie nights.
So I think for a lot of people from Berlin, they had family and they had all sorts of connections there, which I think helps a lot with the isolation that you might feel. There are a lot of foreigners in Berlin, in anywhere where there are foreigners, particularly if they're single, mm. they live alone, and suddenly they're told, oh, you're not allowed to communicate with people outside of your little social bubble inside your house. And it's like, social bubble one, you're asking people to be alone for months on end. If that's going to drive anybody crazy, it's going to be the people who are alone.
The thing that was really tangible for us and a lot of our community here mm-hmm. was this isolation issue. And you are somebody who organizes these really cool things. No, but I think it's a really wonderful, wonderful thing that you offer other people. And I think it's such a cool thing that you also found something that provides value for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very cool. And what about your book recommendations? I know you've got some interesting things that you've been reading.
So my book recommendation is basically a recommendation because I think it allows people to learn about a subject most people don't know of. And the book is called How to Change Your Mind, What is the New Science of Psychedelics? I've got that wrong. What the New Science of Psychedelics Teaches Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence by Michael Pollan. I'm currently reading The Whore of New York, which I'm 2 chapters into and looks extremely exciting. I'm really looking forward to finishing it.
I only find the name slightly offensive because it should be The Sex Worker of New York, but I'll let it go. It's all right. I feel like the title's a little bit older. I'm only slightly distracted at the moment because I'm looking at my bookshelf. I swear to God, I have this book on psychedelics over here and I cannot find it for the life of me. I'll worry about it later. I feel like somebody in book club recommended it a while back. So I'm going to have to finally buckle down and read it.
I feel this is a subject more people need to learn about.
You know, I'm not that well informed. I've heard bits and pieces from different sources. And I think, you know, there's no subject that, you know, that it's going to be bad for you to learn more about. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our interview. I mean, there's so many other topics that I would love to discuss with you. Maybe we'll have you back at some point for some niche topics. But for now, I think that's it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us and for being such a wonderful guest with Professor Barnhouse. He could not be happier that you came to visit.